Blog Talk Radio.
The future.
Radio. PJ.
Digital X. Mwawa full of entertainment. Kufia chite mwiko. Muli weta mwawa commitment. Wanizo ndesa na kuwanzanga. Chimu chine na panjaranga. Ufaya fe. Kaiti mujuze bampa tu bampa ta ule kantushe. Wana chimu sae. Hawa kufundide te wa muzambia. Siku mwona nomo, siku mwona nomo. Mbi wako gambia. Na le mandaba. What about you, my lips? The beauty, all the love for your beauty. We send it a minute on the arm, it's a minute, it's a minute on the arm. We send it to go in the sun now. Do you want after something? We send it a minute on the arm, it's a minute, it's a minute on the arm.
And open. Bambo, good morning. We can't hear you. Okay. That is good. Glenda, I'm just waiting for Twambo to connect with us. For some reason, can't.
No problem.
Can't hear her yet. I'll try and connect her.
Okay.
Okay. Twambo, good morning.
Hi.
We can't hear you, Twambo. Okay, we are having a small second connecting Germany, Glenda, but I'm sure we are going to get that.
Twambo. Do you want to try her first? Oh, she's there.
Ihr Anruf kann zurzeit leider nicht entgegengenommen werden. Wir haben aber nach.
I will then call you back, Glenda. Sorry for that. I'll call you back.
No, that's fine. Call me back once you sort it. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. We'll move from there.
Okay.
Okay, you are on.
Okay.
Okay, you are, I think, on this line as well. It is breaking up, Twambo. We can barely hear anything. Let's try Lucas here, see if she's getting happening. Miss Lucas, good morning.
Good morning, Varoja. How are you?
Not too bad. So you can hear us, and we have Twambo. Twambo, good morning. Okay. So even your phone is also breaking. Maybe you are in the mountains, Twambo. So, We tried to connect with the phone. She's connected to my phone. Okay, we'll think of some magic. Sorry to our listeners, a little bit of music. I'm going to try and do something with Twambo, and then we'll be right back.
Okay. Okay. We seem to be having technical difficulties. We had gone on short commercial just to play some music, but we seem to be having problems with that as well. So for those who are listening live, this is Matilda Mwavalukas. I'm just standing in, waiting for Twambo and Roger to connect the show. Today we'll be talking about going green in Zambia. So this is going to be a very exciting program. I hope all the environmentalists out there stay tuned, and those who are interested in going green in Zambia also call in and stay tuned. While we are waiting, we will try to play some music.
Okay, this is Twambo. I just want to get some feedback. Can you hear me now?
Twambo, good afternoon. We can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, okay, great. I finally managed to figure everything out now.
Oh, yes.
This is what happens when you go away on vacation.
Oh, yeah. No vacations for you, Twambo.
Okay, thank you. So I just want to go ahead and introduce the show again. I'd like to apologize to all our listeners. I'm not in Bonn this weekend. I'm in Stuttgart, and I'm using somebody else's computer. And, you know, as it goes, you know, when something's not so familiar to you, you sort of have to figure it out. So I'd like to say thank you, first of all, to Glenda, who is already on the line. Thank you so much for being patient. Glenda, are you there?
No, I'm quiet.
Okay, all right. So then I can just introduce her. So today I'm going to be talking to Glenda Vege. She is a Zambian lady living in Zambia, and she is the owner and director of Jivana Services Limited, and they offer eco-consultancy services which include looking after the environment by recycling and recovery services and showcasing various sustainable lifestyle choices available in Zambia. Now, the reason that I have Glenda on the show today is we're going to be talking about the Green Expo that is going to be happening in Zambia. And since she is the one spearheading this campaign, I wanted to sort of bring her on and we can talk about what does it mean? Is this something that can actually be done in Zambia? What does going green in Zambia mean? Because a lot of the times when we are living in the diaspora, you know, we're pretty good at recycling, we're good at buying, you know, eco-friendly products and things like that. But what does that mean in Zambia, especially when you can't really say, I'm going to go and buy eco-friendly products, eco-friendly cosmetics? What do you do with, you know, for example, every time you go to the supermarket, you're being given plastic bags for everything. What does this mean? You know, and how can we go green? How are we saving our environment? Some of the assumptions that people have is the fact that there's a lot of, you know, land and forestry in Zambia, and so that we don't need to go green because we still have a lot of green trees, shrubbery, grass, and things like that. But we are at a good point right now where we should start looking after our environment. We should, you know, make a move now to keep it as it is. And I know a lot of times we look towards the diaspora and think we want all these, you know, great big cities and things like that. And so we shouldn't. We should move on to, you know, being more commercial and things like that. But what does it mean to actually go green in Zambia? Now, I would like to bring Ms. Lucas. You are on already. What do you think going green in Zambia would mean?
Twambo, Glenda is on.
Okay, Glenda, good afternoon. Sorry for the confusion. I hope that you are still ready and willing to let us know about the Green Expo in Zambia.
Oh, definitely, and thanks, Twambo. It's great to be on the air.
So I was just introducing you to everybody and letting them know what it is that you do. So basically all I've told them is that you are the owner and director of Jivana Services Limited, and you offer eco-consultancy services in Zambia. Could you just let us know what that means? What kind of services? What does that mean to a normal Zambian?
Well, to be honest, it means a lot of different things. But in a nutshell, it's essentially about understanding what, as either individuals or as an organization, as a business, what you can do to be more eco-friendly, to be more sustainable in the choices that you make every day. I heard you talking about sort of plastic bags when you go shopping. That's one example as an individual. But, for example, as a company, what about recycling your paper? And so it's about having that discussion with individuals and organizations and saying, well, what is the issue? We want to save energy. We want to recycle. And then we start to drill down and pinpoint the practical things that they can actually implement that won't change the quality of their life or the quality of the business.
And I think one
so
important
essentially
thing
that's
is
what I do, and that's how I try to support it.
One thing that I find interesting about the whole thing is I would say that, you know, Zambia is one place where the the talk about going green, it's only really starting to come up now. I mean, we also have the Green Party. I don't know if you know about that. We had Mr. Sinkamba on before. And it is not a conversation that everyday Zambians have. Do you think that there is enough awareness, or is this one of the issues that the Green Expo is going
Twambo,
to be working on?
Hello, Twambo. Sorry, Twambo. Glenda, your background, there's quite a bit of feedback noise, and it is affecting the audio.
Okay.
Yes. I don't know if there's anything you can do about it.
Okay, I'll try and move my location. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Go ahead, Twambo. Sorry.
No, thank you, Roger. No, I was just wanting to find out from Glenda, you know, about going green in Zambia. Is this something that people are aware of? How much awareness do you think there is, and is this something that the Green Expo is going to work on?
Absolutely. I mean, that was why the Green Expo started, because when I started this 3 years ago, we're coming into our third year, that was the issue that people said, well, you can't go green in Zambia because nothing is, you can't do anything here. There's no businesses, there's no supporting infrastructure. And I said, that cannot be true. So as I did my research and investigated it and started working with more and more businesses and individuals and entrepreneurs, I realized that there is actually a huge amount of things that is being done. And all of these organizations, whether they're NGOs or CSOs, it's a concern that they don't have big budgets to be able to go out there and be marketing themselves in a very aggressive way. And so the Green Expo is an opportunity for those organizations, for those individuals, to come and showcase what they have. It is primarily an opportunity for, and I'm going to say the public, the average Zambian, everybody that says, well, I want to do something, but I don't know what to do. It's an opportunity to come and see what is available. And I'm incredibly proud of the fact that what we do have is proudly Zambian. It's all Zambian entrepreneurs and Zambian businesses and Zambian individuals who have done something in their little way. It's nowhere near as developed as it is, you know, in Europe and in the States and so on and so forth. But my argument is if we all just did one thing, imagine the impact.
So
it is a discussion that people are starting to have more and more. And, mm-hmm. you know, going back to your point about is this a discussion that, you know, in light of some of the poverty issues that we have and the concerns that we have around, you know, day-to-day survival, do I even care whether I get 10 plastic bags or one plastic bag?
Right.
I think to some extent there are people who don't care, and for them it's not a priority. There are people who do care, and I think it's a question of us providing the information. Knowledge is power. And mm-hmm. when you are aware and you start to understand, you start to, you know, start to think about it. And I think we're moving into a phase now where I'm having discussions with people about that you can do this, you can save money.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with more money in your pocket.
Okay.
And it's kind of, what do you mean? It's expensive, all these things. I said, yes, there are things that are expensive, but, you know, over time you will save money.
Right. So, you know, one of the things that people think about when they think about going green, the two main things I can think about would be waste management, and then it would also be, you know, planting trees or something like that. Could you just tell us what your vision is? How do you, you know, what are the main points? What are the main categories that you would deal with, especially with, you know, at the Green Expo? Would it just be waste management? Is it pollution? Is it, you know, planting more trees?
It's actually a combination of everything. Waste management is very focal. We, you know, as our cities have grown, waste management is a huge problem. The councils, the government is struggling to cope with, as you know, we are now a middle-income country. We are spending money. We have a lot of consumerism. And that's great for the economy because it builds and it allows to grow, but it means then we have a waste problem because it means mm-hmm. you have a lot more rubbish coming through the system. And it's mm-hmm. a challenge to be able to deal with it. So waste management is a very topical issue. Energy is probably the next biggest, or if not on a par, bigger than waste management. Energy, renewable energy sources, alternative energy supplies and utilization of energy and how we manage our energy is a very big issue as well. I would then say that the next sort of major category of things that are there would probably be, I'm going to say food production in its entirety, and food production from, you know, is it organic? Is it naturally grown? Is it full of chemicals? What's mm-hmm. in my food?
Mm-hmm.
And starting to ask those questions and say, you know, we are blessed here. We have fantastic climate that can allow us to grow pretty much anything we want. But do we even know what's in our food? Is it full of chemicals? And is that having a side effect later going on?
Mm-hmm.
The fourth one would probably be conservation. And I say conservation in the broad context, looking at both fauna and flora, so looking at both our animal species and the diversity of the species that we have within our game park, as
mm-hmm.
well as our natural habitat, and that sort of links back to the trees and planting them and deforestation. So I would say that those are probably the four biggest categories, but, you know, it's a very broad area, and there's a lot of things within each of them that you can drill down to and discuss.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, one thing that you mentioned was, you know, knowing where your food is coming from. Is it organic? Is it grown with a lot of chemicals and things like that? I think one thing that we, especially as Zambians in the diaspora, tend to think is that everything from home is organic and everything is grown the natural way. And we cannot conceive that, you know, anything that could be grown in Zambia would not be organic. You know, which is where the conversation of actually going green in Zambia is really difficult, because we all assume that because it's Zambia, I mean, at least for me, I think in the past, I had assumed that because it's Zambia,
mm-hmm.
you know, then everything is organic because you get your fruits from the trees anyway and things like that. But now with the influx of, you know, these big supermarkets and things like that, a lot of the produce that they bring in is not locally and organically grown. How can you get more of the local farmers involved in, for example, the Green Expo, and then having them showcase their organic food in the local supermarkets?
Well, we do. We work through various organizations, and one of the big organizations that we've been working with is out towards the airport. It's the Kasisi Agricultural Training College, and they have not just their own existing farm and in terms of what they're producing, in terms of what's organic, but they also work with a lot of small-scale farmers, helping them to grow their produce. One of the issues within sort of is it organic or is it not is issue of certification. Organic certification is very, very expensive. And so as a result, you know, you'll come home and you'll have a look in the shops, you'll look in the supermarkets and you'll see all these lovely green leafy vegetables, but none of them will say that it's organic. And like you say, you have this assumption that it is grown naturally, but more and more, without the conservation and protection of our natural habitat and some of our farming methods, you know, the nutrients in the soil are depleted, and it affects, obviously, the quality of what you grow. So as a result, the next alternative is fertilizer. Because if you think about a natural farming cycle, the rains, you know, just before the rains come, what do the farmers do? They prepare the land, they put the seed down, and they put fertilizer. And it's normally a chemical fertilizer. It's not a natural organic fertilizer. So even though, yes, it's grown outside and it's not, you know, it might not be sprayed, you know, the nutrients that the plant is growing with is coming from sort of a non-organic source. So I think, you know, there's a combination of both, and it is a reality. It's unfortunate, you know, recently there's been, you know, companies that have had difficulties with classifying, and I think you would have been aware of the Zambeef situation, and when they had problems with, you know, what was painted across the media and what was happening with their meat supplies and where their meat was coming from. And to be honest, as much as I, you know, I'm not against Zambeef in any way, I think it was a good thing because I think it allowed people to start to ask questions.
Right.
You know, when you're rearing chickens, are they free-range village chickens? The majority of the chicken in the shops now is not free-range village chicken. It's commercially reared, and what are they being fed on? And it's these questions that, you know, as consumers, we have to ask. So you can still find, you know, what you require, and that's why I said sort of naturally grown as opposed to not necessarily certified organic. But it's a question of asking the questions and understanding where it's coming from. And I think that as we have grown in a middle-income society now, is that there are more and more of these questions starting to happen, and it you know, people need to start to understand, where is my food coming from? And if I'm going to continue to just put fertilizer down and never put any nutrients back into the soil, what am I conserving? The quality of that soil, my crop yields will decrease over time, and so on and so forth. So, you know, this is something that Kasisi and a number of other, you know, Kasisi is just one example, but there's a lot of other organizations and individuals who've been doing a lot of work with rural communities, with small-scale farmers, to say to them, listen, think about the way we grow. Think about how you manage your supply. And I think that the quality of the produce that is now available is obviously significantly better because of a number of different things as well. But the questions are definitely being asked, and it the onus is back onto the entrepreneurs and back onto the farmers to deal with those questions and to respond to it appropriately.
Okay. So I'd just like to let our listeners know you're listening to Diaspora and Truth, and I am speaking to Glenda Vega in Lusaka, and she is the owner and director of Jivana Services, and they are the ones that conceptualize the Green Expo Zambia. So the aim of this event is to promote lifestyle choices which allows for individual accountability whilst going green sustainably in Zambia. Now, you had mentioned before that a lot of people don't want to spend money getting certified. You know, you have to be certified organic. The question is, who does this certification?
Yeah. To the best of my knowledge, the certification process is all done by, I'm going to say, foreign international experts with support from the Organic Producers Association of Zambia. Through them. It's a very expensive exercise. So for a small-scale farmer, and I stand to be corrected, but the figures are in excess of approximately $15,000 for certification. So for a small-scale farmer to find that kind of money is, you know, it's a dream that, you know, it may not exist. And it's not just about, you know, having your land assessed and your soil sample tested and your produce tested and then saying, yes, this is organic. It's about the process in which you then continue to produce that food going forward. Mm-hmm. And that then needs to be monitored and regulated and reported on and submitted back. And it's an intensive process. And I think you'll find that even in the diaspora, you'll find that organic produce is generally much more expensive
yes.
than what I call the commercially grown produce. And that's partly because of some of the certification issues, perhaps of, access to market and where those organic farms are. You know, they're not very close to the city, so, you know, transportation costs have an issue. And all of that helps, you know, brings on board the additional cost factor of what is there. So certification, you know, for me, I'm a firm believer in saying if it's organic, that's wonderful. I would much rather focus the attention in saying, is this naturally grown? And start mm-hmm. to have the conversation about, are we putting nutrients back into our soil so that we don't have to put in artificial fertilizers? Are we using what I call the organic fertilizers? Are we using the manure from our chickens, from our rabbits, from our sheep and our goats, from our cattle? Are we using that natural manure and putting it back into the earth? Because that's natural fertilizer. It costs me nothing. They're already mm-hmm. there on the farm. I don't have mm-hmm. to go and spend money and bring them in. Mm-hmm. And I think for me that is a better conversation to sort of to move towards and then start to say this is A, proudly Zambian, and B, this is now naturally grown. The organic certification will come mm-hmm. as the economy grows, as we develop, as the demand and the requirement for the market grows, so mm-hmm. will the demand to say, I want to see your certificate. Mm-hmm. And it will come. It will come with time, but it takes time. It just takes time. It's still a very young industry here.
So, well, one question that I always come back to, especially when people are doing, you know, something great like you are doing with the Green Expo and making people more aware about, you know, going green and involving companies and things like that, the question seems to always come back to, where does the Zambian government come in? Are they playing any role in promoting, you know, eco-friendly services and things like that? How is the Zambian government involved? Will they be involved in the Green Expo? What is it that they're doing to make, you know, this sort of information available to the public?
Good question. And I think there is a lot, there's always more that can be done.
Mm-hmm.
In a nutshell, there's always more that can be done. I think that we have to look at some of the topical issues that, you know, government faces and what are the concerns that are there. And if we think about what are, you know, the most pressing issues, where are the priorities? So if we have that thought process in mind or that background in mind, my comment is that government is involved. They are doing, I think, in my opinion, what they can to support. Certainly from a policy perspective, for example, if I look at energy, you know, any solar products or most solar products that are coming into the country are classified duty-free because they're not manufactured here.
Mm-hmm.
So they're imported. So it means that those products are coming into the country duty-free to make it more affordable for us to be able to buy them and have access to alternative options. There are, you know, investment opportunities for anybody who wants to come in and look at various renewable energy sources. And, you know, if we're looking at biogas and biodiesel projects and initiatives that are there, they're there in a very small scale. The government needs to do more.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be more support, especially for smaller businesses who, you know, we don't have big budgets. We might not have a big grant that came in and helped us launch what we're doing. So it takes time for that to come through, and resources then become the challenge as you go forward. So there is a lot that is happening behind the scenes, always an opportunity for government to do much, much more. And I know that this is some of the discussions that, you know, some of the exhibitors will be having with government representatives who will be there, as well as with some of the visitors that are coming through and coming to join me. We have the Deputy Minister from Local Government and Housing who will be joining us this year to officially open the event on Friday morning. And I know that that's a discussion, some of the discussion, you know, the exhibitors will be having with him about, well, what else can we do? How else can you support us? How else can we push this agenda so that it is it's much more topical and much more in the forefront? But like I say, you know, it's not, yes, there is a government responsibility. Yes, there is a council responsibility. But at the same time, as individuals, as Zambians, we have a responsibility in ourselves. to do something. Right. And that is important because I have to make the choice. It's like choosing, do I buy low-fat milk or do I buy full-fat milk? It's my choice. So I have to make the choice. And if I make the choice, I create the demand, I create the market. And that's, if I start to have the conversations, even in my individual capacity, that's what starts to drive the behavior change that starts to lobby through government, not just the individual businesses.
So one thing that I noticed, you know, one time I visited Botswana, and I remember going into a shop right there, and I remember you had to pay for the plastic bags to get them. And I was surprised at that. I was like, what do you mean I have to pay for the plastic bag? I just bought groceries. Now I have to pay for the plastic bag. But now I understand why. Because it's the same in Germany here as well. If you go to the grocery store and you have groceries, if you want a plastic bag, you are going to pay for it, which is what encourages people to buy, you know, the big bags, and you carry them in your car. You keep one in your car. You keep, you know, a small one in your purse so that if you do go to the grocery store, you're not spending more money to, you know, pay for plastic bags. Now, my question is, who is supposed to go forth and say to ShopRite, please make sure that people are paying for the plastic bags to deter them from buying these plastic bags? That's my first question. My second question is, I do remember that years and years ago in Zambia, you could, Zambia bottlers, you could take back your Mossi bottles, your Torino bottles, your Fanta bottles. You could take them back to the factories and they could reuse them. And this is no longer done. Now they have these, you know, these beer bottles that you don't have to return. You can just throw them in the trash. Is this just more cost effective for them? Is that why they have done that? So those are the two questions I had.
I'll start with the first one around how do we, as it were, ShopRite or Pick and Pay or Spar or any local supermarket. Ultimately, in countries where that has happened, that has been driven by government initiative. It's normally law, and that fee, that 2 cents, 3 cents, 50 cents, whatever it is that you pay for that plastic bag, is then collected and it goes back into government coffers. The principle, general principle behind that is that that money goes back into government coffers, but then allows, it's a source of funding for governments to then utilize that money for various initiatives, whether it's waste management or perhaps recycling of plastic and programs that they themselves manage. There are several challenges, if you look across both Botswana and in South Africa, where they have implemented policies like that in terms of the administration. I'm not going to say that, you know, it was a good thing and it failed because it's still happening. I think that it's something that we should be considering as a country in terms of what we need to do. But that is a monumental change that needs to happen because, I think, and you know, at one point there has been the discussion that should we ban plastic completely? Ban it completely like in Uganda so that there is no plastic around, and then we don't have to deal with it. Well, yes, you can do that. My argument is what happens to the plastic producers, the plastic manufacturers who employ thousands of people? What happens to their industry? So suddenly you've banned plastic and we don't have to deal with it with waste, but suddenly we have thousands of people who have no jobs because those factories will close. I would rather look at technology that is available, and you can buy, you can get the technology in Africa. It's an additive that you put into the plastic when you manufacture it that enables it to break down. It's an oxo-biodegradable additive that you can put into the product. It doesn't change the way that the product functions or is utilized. But if the plastic bag gets thrown out the window and left on the roadside over time, you know, 6 months, 18 months, whatever it might be, the plastic bag will break down. To me, that is taking advantage of technology, of innovation, enabling employment to continue while still having a resource that is important for our economy. So it's a twofold argument in terms of what you can do. My suggestion, my recommendation, exactly what you spoke, putting in, you know, reusable bags that you can buy in all the shops. They're all there. Buy the big reusable bags. Carry them with you. Carry them in the car, carry it in your handbag. When you go and do your grocery shopping, take it with you so you don't have to go and do plastic bags and then take it home and you unpack it and you don't have the problem of plastic bags. But everybody has to do it. Everybody has to get into the habit. It takes time to to get used to doing things like that because it's not something that we generally do. So that's sort of, I suppose, my response to your first question.
Mm-hmm.
My response to your second question around the disposable bottles. Well, let's just say that it is a very sore point for me.
Mm-hmm.
I am horrified at the fact that it was allowed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
The argument that was put forward by the producers was that they needed to manage their operational costs. The cost of cleaning the Torino bottles and the beer bottles and processing them clean so that they could reuse them for production and fresh bottling was that it was affecting their operation and their ability to stay in Zambia. And the only way that they could continue to operate in Zambia and continue to employ Zambians as they have it in terms of what was going on was for them to go disposable.
Okay.
I have a very big problem with the fact that that was allowed to happen because I think what should have happened and what should happen now going forward, it should rather be that instead of going disposable so that they can make more money and improve their bottom line, is they should have been taxed a specific percentage or an amount on turnover or something that went back into government coffers that allowed for the recycling of those disposable bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that there is a discussion being happening, and I know that there is, there is a law and there is policy in place, but it has not been implemented, where the responsibility of waste that is being generated will be put back onto the manufacturer. So in this scenario, the responsibility of collecting those disposable beer bottles and Coke bottles and Torino bottles and so on and so forth, the onus will be on the manufacturer to collect and recycle.
Mm-hmm.
But that takes implementation. That takes time. You know, recycling plants are expensive. It's not something, one company is just going to turn around and say, yeah, sure, let's invest, a few million dollars and, we can do this tomorrow. It's not going to be difficult for us because we want to stay and operate. They have to be competitive in the global market. So, there's a lot of, questions around how that needs to happen. Now, if there's a tax and that tax is collected, who manages it? Is this tax that is collected, is it managed by government and there's a central recycling depot for everything, perhaps? Is it up to the private sector to work with government and private, public-private partnerships? Probably a combination of that as well. But this is the discussion. This is the awareness. This is the information that we as Zambians need to turn around and say, hang on. No, I don't want to buy those bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, because it means I can't recycle them. I can't use them. It means I can't do anything with them. So
Right. What
are my alternatives? My alternatives, well, there's lots of plastic bottles, but it comes back to the same story. Plastic is not, there is some plastic recycling, but, the plastic recyclers that are.
Okay, I think we've lost Ms. Ferge there. I can't seem to hear her anymore. We are live on Zambia Block Talk Radio. This is Twambuka Pilikisha, and we are speaking to Glenda Vege today about going green in Zambia. She's talking about the Green Expo, which is something that she has organized in Zambia. It's a convention where companies can come together and talk about how they can go green. Is it sustainable, and in what ways this can be done? So this is a really, really interesting conversation for me, because when you live in the diaspora, like I am living now in Germany, I'm very conscious about recycling. There's lots of, Germany is pretty big on recycling, big on, not using plastic for everything and things like that. And I was really interested when I heard about this program, the Green Expo, and that this is something that was being done in Zambia. So I brought her onto the show to hear from her, what does it mean? Because like she mentioned, a lot of the times, what holds us back, especially as Zambians, is thinking, where are we going to start from this? And is the government involved and all these other things? So this is why I had her on the show to sort of explain to us, what does it mean?
Hi, Trumbo.
Hi. Okay, you're back. Great. So I was just letting our listeners what we're talking about. And I just wanted to go and let the listeners know, if you have any questions or comments for Glenda, I'm sure she'll be welcome to answer you and to hear what you have to say. So please go ahead and press 1 on your keypad if you have any questions or comments. I would like to hear what you think about going green in Zambia. Is it something that you've thought about? Do you, you know, consciously behave in a green way when you're back home for a holiday or something? I would really like to hear your opinions about that. So Glenda, I just want to quickly talk about, for example, cosmetics. You get a lot of green, you know, you get a lot of cosmetics here that are certified organic. You know, you've heard of like the Body Shop and things like that. And I know you can get in ShopRite, I think, you can get all these products from Chisamba, I think. They make some really great tea tree oil soaps and rosemary oil and things like that. Is this the only existing company that does that, or is there more and there's just not, you know, so much advertising for it?
Okay, yes, there are more companies that I'm aware of. The Chisamba oils and stuff that you see in ShopRite are generally sort of your natural oils, and so maybe a soap and some kind of an aromatherapy oil of some kind. There is another company called Kalahari Natural Oils. They previously have been exporting the natural oils, baobab oils and so on and so forth that they collect. They have been exporting, but they have recently just launched on the retail market, and they will be exhibiting at the expo this year for the first time. So I'm delighted to have them on board and to learn more about their produce and their products. There are two other companies that I'm aware of, one also based in Chisamba and one based in Mazabuka. The organization in both of them are their competitors, and they tend to deal with sort of what I call, I'm going to use the reference you made, the Body Shop range of products, sort of your skincare, creams, scrubs. They also do a range of skincare products for both men and women, dry skin, oily skin, eye creams, night creams, day creams, et cetera, et cetera. I am aware that the company in Mazabuka, it's called Essential Skincare. They have received their full organic certification for their products, and they will also be exhibiting again this year at the expo and promoting what they have and what is available out there, you know, for us to utilize. So there are more and more companies that are starting to come forward and to do this. I do know that there is a company that is founded by a Zambian who's come back from the diaspora. Mutinta has been launched what I call Color Revolution. And during a consultation with her, I must admit, I had no idea. She told me that she actually developed her own range of makeup specific. So, you know, your mascaras, your lipsticks, your foundations and so on and so forth that are naturally based. Now, she doesn't have organic certification as far as I'm aware, but her product is natural. It's something that she developed because she was allergic to some of the chemicals that were out there, and she's home and she's selling her products here, and that is also available. So you know, it's nowhere near as developed as what's out there, and they may not, you know, a lot of these small producers will not be able to get into the big retail chains, into the big supermarkets, because they don't have the capacity to deal with the big volumes. So that is part of the reason why, you know, you go to ShopRite, you go to Pick and Pay, you go to the big supermarkets, and you don't find them. But there are smaller outlets where you can find them. Umoyo Natural House Shop has quite a lot of the products that I've spoken about, and they are they're very keen on promoting anything natural and organic in terms of from a health perspective. There is recently opened in Roma a small shop and cafe called the Green Shop and Cafe. And inside there, you will find, I think they ran around to find all the products that they could that were natural and based in grown in Zambia. But they also provide an outlet for the organic farmers, the small-scale organic farmer, to sell their vegetable produce. So you can buy your vegetables there as well as have something that has been, you know, have a meal or have a coffee or have a carrot cake or whatever it is that has been made from produce that is organically produced. So the demand is growing. This wasn't here 5 years ago. This wasn't here 2 years ago. But it's there now. And it's a question of us as Zambians supporting it so that it can continue to grow.
Okay. Now, I'd just like to go to the phone lines because there's, you know, questions and comments. And I would just like to go directly to Canada. Mr. Charlie, please go ahead with your question or your comment for Glenda.
Thank you, Twombo. But let me start by saying, Twombo, Glenda wasn't nice to me. She was telling me how the weather in Zambia, all that stuff. But it's okay. It's okay. Glenda, welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, let me say I live in a small town, Okotox, here in Alberta. And it is very well known for green revolution. Some of the houses they are building, they are being built straight with solar panels and stuff like that. And I'm thinking maybe the next thing the diaspora have to do, if we were to build 10 units, so to say, for sale, maybe that would be a start. Houses which will be using just solar panels. But let me also say one thing I've seen here. What the council is doing out there in Calgary, the big city, or here in Okotox, in all the schools, the councils are putting what we may, I don't know, dust bins or collection bins, where people can put bottles.
Yeah.
Yeah, where people can put also plastic, stuff like that. And Twombo asked you a very interesting question about how what government is doing. Do you think this is one way I think your expo can compel some of the city councils to begin to put collection bags, collection bins around town so that people have somewhere they can put these plastics? And finally, the mining in the the mining in the national park. How is that going? Where are we at with that? I thought that was would address that as well.
Okay, that's a great question, and you know, it just means that you need to come home and enjoy the good weather here, so that you don't feel so bad about what I said.
Yes.
Okay. Your first question around the recycling stations. This is a discussion I've had with several corporate organizations in Zambia over the last 2 years, where they want to, as part of a corporate social responsibility, work with the council and implement and put in place these recycle stations. The simple answer is, can it be done? We can do it tomorrow. It can be done tomorrow. It will not take a lot of time to do it. My issue, my concern is, what happens to that separated waste? We do not have a glass recycling plant in Zambia. So what happens to the glass? We're just going to take it to the landfill and chuck it into landfill where it does nothing. Number two, the plastic, because of the technicality components around plastic, needs to then be resorted. The existing plastic recyclers do not have the capacity to cope. These are guys who started a plant, you know, that would deal with, for example, 2 tons of waste a day. They receive delivered to their door 7 tons of plastic a day. They cannot cope with the existing volumes that they have. They need support to expand, so that the infrastructure can then cope with them being collected from these recycle stations. And so when a company or somebody says to me, is that something we want to do? I said, yes. Don't look at it from the end of the game. Look at it from the beginning of the game. Let's go back to the recyclers. Let's go back to the councillor and build infrastructure that will enable them to cope with the volume of what is there. Then we can implement it. Because you can put the lovely bins there. It will all be separated and we'll go through a massive education campaign and encouraging us what to do. We will do it, and then we'll go to Tunga, which is the landfill site, and everything will just get put all together because we don't have the capacity to deal with it. So that is where I think private partnerships with the private sector and public sector and government need to start to come into play. And it's big investment. These are big investments that need to happen. They need to come on board to be able to go forward. So that's my response to, you know, can it be done? And I'll come back to, in the immediate instance, what you can do. The immediate instance in terms of what you can do around recycling and waste management is start to say, what can you do at home? At home, we have an abundance of natural vegetable produce, and generally we have very, you know, we're very green in terms of the way we eat and, you know, very healthy food produce. So what can we do with our food waste technology? And there are different systems that you can work with. You can go with a biogas alternative where your food waste goes into a biogas digester, and then that feeds back into your home and gives you energy, so that you can then sort of supplement your electricity or water electricity that's coming through to your home from Zesco. That's one option. The second option is to literally have a compost heap. Compost your own food waste, and then that food waste will go straight back into your gardens, your lawns that you have, so that you're putting back into the earth. If you are composting your food waste, you will reduce the amount of waste that's going into landfill anywhere from 60 to 80%, depending on what, you know, you're buying and what you're consuming as an individual or as a business. And there are solutions out there. There are wormery solutions. There are domestic composting units that I know most of you will have in, you know, in the diaspora. I have an agency for one of those products here in Zambia. And it's to be able to say, well, you can do something. So if I only do one thing, remember I said earlier, let's do one thing. Mm-hmm. If the only thing that I do to be greener is to recycle my food waste, at least it's something. I might still have plastic. I might still have glass bottles from Zambia Breweries. But at least I've done one thing. If my neighbor then joins on board and does something else, you know, slowly, slowly over time, more and more of us will do something. So I hope that clarifies your question and answers it for you.
That's true. Yes. Thank you. Yes, it does.
Okay. So I would just like to go to more comments and questions. We're going to go to area code 816. Last number is 8598. Please go ahead with your question or your comment for Glenda.
Good afternoon, Glenda and Twombo. This is Matilda Lucas. Great show. I love what you're presenting out there. I think it gives a fresh look at going green a lot of times. And I'm sorry if I'm going to sound a little bit derogatory, but a lot of times when people hear green, they're thinking of tree huggers and all that. But that has changed these days, and I like how you're presenting this. My question to you is, you know, when you talk about recycling, especially with plastic, you know, you gave an example on supermarkets paying for plastic and so on. I'm not very sure if the plastic is made in Zambia or are owned by Zambian companies, but when you start making a huge impact, even here in the United States, I can see that large operations or the government may want to start placing a permafoot around their territory and say, no, you cannot go there because they're going to affect their bottom line. Have you ran into anything like that so far, or is it still new? Okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you said you have.
Yeah, Matilda,
okay,
that's
so
a great question, and I think, you know, this is... Yeah,
go ahead,
I think
Glenn.
This is something that, you know, the discussions are happening behind closed doors. But, for government to put that kind of levy on consumers, because ultimately it's you and me, the consumer, that pays for it, that, you know, to me, that's the easy part. The issue for me is, how is that managed? If you put the onus back on the manufacturer like they're intending to do, how is that regulated? Does government have the capacity to regulate and monitor these companies that are doing it? And, you know, I think that is a challenge for government to be able to go through and monitor and regulate it. Putting the law through Parliament is easy. It's the implementation and the monitoring there too. And so if they're going to do that and we're going to go that route, do we have the capacity and the resources to be able to do it? To some extent, we may not have the capacities just yet and the resources to be able to implement that kind of system. And what will happen is the companies, the investors will start to say, you know, for me, this doesn't make sense. It's too much on my operational costs. I'm going to pull out. But we don't want them to pull out. We want them to look at it and say, how can this affect my bottom line? And the theme for this year's Green Expo is going from green to gold, taking a green initiative, taking a green project, taking something like recycling, dealing with the waste that I'm producing as a company and putting out there as a part of the product that I sell, and turning that into gold for me, gold for my company. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at the big supermarkets and organizations in Europe, Walmart and all of them, there's hundreds of examples. They have invested millions and hundreds of and lots of time and resources into understanding what they can do to get to the point where they're getting the gold. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a long process depending on the organization. And so Walmart have gone back and said, well, you know, we want to know where our produce is coming from. So all suppliers have to go through a process of verification as part of what we call a life cycle analysis, where before Walmart says this product is organic, they've proved it. They've proved that that button or that shirt wasn't made by, child slave labor in Peru or wherever it may be. They've gone through the process of where that's done. But that is an initiative that they have taken over decades of time and resources that they put back into it. Now, my argument is, are some of the international organizations that are working here, the local companies that are working here, do they have the capacity? Do they have the resources? Do they have the know-how to be able to do that? It takes time to do it, and then you then need your regulation and your government policies behind that to support them in what they do, so that this is a 5-year, 15-year, 20-year program that they're going down, and so that they, you know, whether it's a tax rebate or whatever it is, that's where the incentive, and that's where we need to start looking smart about how these initiatives can be done going forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Glenda, so much. I had to mute Matilda's mic because now we've come to the end of our show, unfortunately.
I just wanted to say
thank you, Glenda. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Okay.
For everybody that is interested in knowing about the Green Expo, there's a website, www.thegreenexpozambia.com.
Yes.
And this will be happening from the 4th to the 6th of April, 2014, at the Lusaka National Museum. So if you in the diaspora know anybody that has, you know, a company that would be interested in going to exhibit or just to learn, you know, how to go green, how to run your company in the right way, as, you know, with relation to your organic products and your waste management, this is something that I would really, really recommend. Glenda, I apologize for the, you know, confusion that we had in the beginning of the show, but it would be great to hear from you after the Green Expo is done, because I think that there's a lot of people in the diaspora that are interested in helping Zambia go green, and they just don't know how. So I would just actually, very quickly, if you have a suggestion that something can do as we run out of time, is there something we can do from the diaspora to help Zambia go green?
I think support the Green Expo Zambia. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. The contact details are there. My email address is there. It's info@thegreenexpozambia.com. Mm-hmm. Send us your comments. Send us your queries, what you want to do. I will link you up with the relevant companies that are there. We just have to start the conversation, and that is how it will happen.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Glenda, for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you to everybody.
Thank you to everybody that has listened and had any questions. Bye bye. For anybody that would like to get in touch with Glenda, thegreenexpozambia.com. Get in touch. Let's go green, not only where we are living, but in Zambia as well. And yes, thank you so much for being on Diaspora and Truth. I am going to say goodbye from sunny Stuttgart. Mr. Charlie is on next, and he's going to be discussing what has happened in Zambia and in the world with the current affairs. So stay tuned. This is Zambia Block Talk Radio. Thank you.
Victoria Mkenge.
Hati Bonanga.
Hati Bonanga. Tati wetu chini. La pe kuna. La wafe la kuna.
New edit.
Hati Bonanga.
Hati
Bonanga. Mpo wetu chini.
hauniti hey wena
hey wena
hey wena
nawe
so
kiba nini
la siyako
And welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio. I love Johnny Craig and Asivole Nela. Asivonanga is a song dedicated to Wow Hill. Good morning once again. We are in cold Canada. For some reason, it's supposed to be spring, but it's not working that way. And what can we do? We have a lot of stories which are coming from Zambia. We are going to be reporting, and I just want to welcome a few of my friends who help us run this every day. Titus, good morning. Okay, Titus is probably time. Okay. Ms. Lucas and Titus and Nathan are connected together. Ms. Lucas, how are you?
I'm fine. We should need konono na chung pakul ba tayo soko. Anyway,
yes, brother.
I am well, brother.
And how is Nathan in Texas? Where are you, Nathan, to be connected to the phone?
No, I'm doing okay, Roger. He's looking at you, making me laugh.
I know.
Patrick, what he mean konono means?
No, Dr. Patrick, someone is snoring, busy snoring on the phone while they are calling on the radio. That is so funny.
Snoring, that's a mouth word. That's a mouth definition of snoring.
Okay. And Pennsylvania, brother Daniel Tsewe, how are you?
I'm doing good, Roger. It's raining here too, so don't feel bad. You know how long it's raining here.
Rain is okay. Rain is okay, but if we have to deal with snow, it is something else. Okay, let's check on what is happening in the news. In the last half hour, we probably, as always, are going to be on the story, which is on Lusaka Times. The president is calling his ministers this time. He called his MPs as useless, and now it's a hot story. He has called his cabinet ministers as useless. And a lot of people are suggesting that the person who appoints them, if these people are useless, maybe the problem has to be the person who appoints them. But we'll get to that story. Let's check on what is happening somewhere else. This week, President Obama addressed the students in Belgium. And I thought the speech was very interesting, as always. I tried to follow him and some of the things Obama has said. But before that happened on, I think, Thursday, on Wednesday, answering Dr. Patrick, one of the reporters asked him if America's influence, if America's power has gone down. It was interesting for Obama to say, you know, don't take what Russia has done to mean Russia is a world power. Russia is doing what they are doing not out of I've forgotten the term, but he's doing what they are doing out of weakness. I thought that was profound, Dr. Patrick. It, Russia is doing what they are doing out of weakness, because they don't have any influence around the world. Yes, they are a regional power in Europe, but what they are doing with their neighbors there, it is not out of strength. Yes, that's the word you used, out of strength, but it's out of weakness, Dr. Patrick.
Yes, it's as I always like to say, is prestidigitation of politics. Your eyes are on one thing when the real game is being played in another area. You have the news reporter, whether or not his intentions were good or whether or not it was to score political points in different sectors, asked the question, and I don't believe he or she expected that answer. And the answer was an answer to respond directly to the geopolitics of the time, to President Putin directly, and to the United States economic sector, the commercial sector. What he is saying is, your question is directly towards military with respect to the weakness.
Yes.
And my answer is directly towards the economic impact that it's having on Russia. And Russia can do little to nothing with respect to the economic impact that it will have been placed on it by the United States and the EU. And there, Russia's only response is militarily in the fact that it's just regional. It's local. As a matter of fact, yesterday, while President Obama was meeting with the King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, President Putin called President Obama and said, "Let's talk."
Mm-hmm.
So, at present, Secretary Kerry, Secretary Kerry is visiting and meeting with his counterpart to quote unquote talk. So the question of weakness is a misnomer, and we will see how, quote-unquote, weak President Obama and the United States is in the coming days.
Yes. Exactly, Dr. Patrick, what you have said. And the reporter, you know, he was looking at him in his software of responding. I saw the reporter trying to if Obama was saying to the reporter, if you are trying to imply that the United States power is in its hardware, taking our boots everywhere. You know, you could see in the reporter, he was meant to look very, very small. And, I really loved it. Lastly,
exactly.
One other thing, which he said, I don't know how you follow Nathan, if you follow some of these things Obama does. He was addressing the students in Belgium, and he said, you know, what happened, say, for instance, in Ukraine? It was the citizens themselves, when they saw a corrupt government, they stood up to it. What happened in Ukraine is the same is what has happened in Egypt, what has happened in Tripoli. It is the citizens themselves who are standing up, whether politicians like it or not. This movement which has come, being led by citizens, will not be stopped. And I thought to my own country, they, you know, there can be intimidation in Zambia, they can stop people from organizing, from assembling. What has started in the world today, being led by citizens, Nathan, will not be stopped. I thought that was important.
No, it cannot be stopped. Although I didn't listen to the speech myself, but I think it's very important that President Obama reiterated that point about something that was started by citizens, or what the other politicians have done, specifically Putin and Russia, has jumped onto an opportunity and completely misconstrued and misinterpreted the action and just taken a... He's basically acted from an opportunistic point of view. But that cannot be stopped. You can't stop something, because democracy is about the citizens, Roger and everybody. It's about people. It's about managing people. So if the people say you are not delivering, you are not being true to your probably campaign promises or commitments or the plan that you sought to the people when you campaigned, I think we have that's why we vote. And I'm glad, like you've been reminding everybody here every other weekend to say, I'm glad in Zambia we are at a point where we are, where we have now realized to say, oh, so my vote counts. That's a very beautiful and powerful place to be, Roger, you know. It's a very powerful place to be as a people and as a nation.
I like that. I like that. And I hope that our leaders are listening, because what is happening world over, and they are watching what is happening over. No barrel of gun or oppression from the police will stop people from seeking freedom, Dr. Patrick, says Obama. You can end on this note, Dr. Patrick, and then we go and see what is happening in our country.
Yes, I agree. It's again going back to prestidigitation of politics. Always look at the other side of where the finger is being pointed, because you'll find the real answer on the other side.
That's true. That's true. Okay. So, news in brief. Let's see what is happening in Zambia. There is an interesting story here, Mr. Kat, from, is it Kapalala? Kapalala is a place in Wapra province. This man, it was at night, he goes in his vehicle, he starts his vehicle, he wants to drive. He found out on the steering wheel, there is a snake, which is around the steering wheel. So the man gets so scared while he's driving. he crashes the vehicle. This happened in Wapra province. I thought that was... the man is okay, though. The man is okay, thank God. But it is... another story, Ms. Lucas. We are in... what place is it now? In Masaiti Boma. A policeman was drunk, so I think the neighborhood watch, there was a neighborhood watch guy wanted to get, he was on duty, by the way, the policeman, and with AK-47, those they work with, and the neighborhood watch wanted to grab a gun from I think something happened, three shots were fired, and the guy who wanted to grab the gun was injured. How, even up to today, I remember when I was in Zambia, you could find the Nathan, policemen drinking kachasu, drinking kachasu in the neighborhood while is with a gun right there on duty. I don't know if this thing have continued to this day. I thought that was sad. There is a sad story being reported from Solwezi. A lady threw a child, a one-month-old baby, in the pit latrine. I think he wanted to cut. Thank God the child was discovered. They heard the child cry. They rescued the child. The child is now in Solwezi General Hospital. I sent a message to the guys on Facebook. I'm part of the Solwezi radio station. I hope they will answer my call. I'm thinking this child is a miracle. Probably we can find a way of helping a child like this. Let's look at a lady. When you hear a story like this, what goes in your mind? And Miss Clotilde here, I don't know if my look at. Okay, Miss Clotilde, how are you?
I'm barely here. My voice is gone. So
what happened? What happened to you? You have a cold?
Yeah.
Okay. Make sure when they say drink a lot of fluid. I'm going to give you. I'm a simple doctor on radio. When you drink any fluid, please warm them up. Warm it just a little bit. It helps. It helps a lot. Don't drink cold stuff. That don't help. That is from Dr. Charlie here on Zambia Block Talk.
God, radio doctor.
Okay. Rest my comment on that, Nathan, on this lady. The body was found with, not the body, the baby was found with maggots, says, you know, thrown in the latrine. You know the latrines
I don't know why anybody would do that. That's not good. It's in you men. What I was thinking is that I was thinking about the law that we have here, that they have, which is in, I think it's across all the states, Dr. Patrick, where I'm talking about this law, Clotilda, where if you, I even hate to use these words, if you don't want the child or the baby, you just go and leave it at the fire station, you know. Why don't we come up with something like that? You know what I'm saying? I remember some stories a long time ago, what people used to do is go and leave the child at the Catholic convent or something like that, you know. Let's talk about things like that. It doesn't reflect well for you to go and throw a baby in a pit latrine. Or like what people do here on a dumpster. I mean, take the child to the fire station or to a place where they can take care of it. Even take it to the hospital and just leave it by the door. So do something close to sensible, because there's nothing sensible about you not wanting the child anywhere. But throwing it in the pit latrine, Roger, is going too far. What I'll do to that person, I wouldn't like to say on the radio.
let's bring a Kaniki-like clinic that's in Dola, Copper Belt, to this particular province and other provinces.
That's a good one.
I agree. I like that. And then Nathan, what you are saying, I think it is lack of education. A lot of comments which were on Lusaka Times on this issue. I think it will be very easy probably for us to jump on it and say the lady is bad and this. I'm not sure any person in a good frame of mind would want to do something like this. We have a deficiency in counseling. If it is a young mothers, you know, Nathan, you and I, where we come from, when a girl gets pregnant out of wedlock, so to say, the scorn they receive from family members, this can put a lot of strain on these young mothers to cause them to do things like this.
Yeah, it's very, very true. The aspect of education and information is a very critical aspect of it. It would be important, I agree with you. Instead of us passing, unilateral judgment on this person, it would be good to understand their situation. And their, I don't know whether that article said anything, but I just read the headline. Whether it says anything about the condition of this lady and things like that, but it would be good to assess the case and look at the situation and try to help the person. There should be some provision put in place, like what Dr. Patrick is saying. What I'm saying is probably the next phase of Wachanda's project in our work with Kaniki Clinic is probably to take that route and try to address that situation, because she's basically dealing with new mothers and newborn children. So that's probably something she can look at and pursue and try to. She's already got a connection with a commissioner from Dola District, that connection with the office, which gives her that connection to the office. To State House. So she can pursue it that way with a member of parliament in Indola, and they can take that thing up. Let that initiation or the birthing of that project come from Indola. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yes, that would be nice. No, we have to push this, so it doesn't just be one of those stories. I think there are a lot of mothers who are under a lot of stress. They don't know what to do. I think this can push the radio stations. Tell the mothers there are options. There are options out there, and we can connect with them. Next story, we are in Zimbabwe. Three Zambians were killed in Zimbabwe. They went there for poaching. So this is one thing with our own country. Poachers, they are always getting killed when they go for some reason. I don't know if it is overzealous rangers we have. I don't know what can be done, because if someone is going for poaching, I don't necessarily think the police are that excited to this wasn't the right thing. Last week we talked about, okay, before we go to last week, the MMD, Nathan, undergoing some very tough times as well. They want to dump Dr. Mumba, who is their president, Dr. Patrick. They want to get rid of them because they lost a lot of by-elections of late. The party doesn't seem to be going anywhere, according to some members who are there. Zambia Watchdog is reporting that PF is organizing this because they don't want President Sata to face Dr. Mumba in Northern Province, where he comes from, because it's going to be a tough time for them to win. What are your thoughts on this, Nathan? Well, you don't have anything going on. Do you agree that the MMD may require some introspection, so to say, if it includes changing the leadership? Let it be so.
Well, the type of introspection they need to do, the factors of whether they need change of leadership is may not necessarily be the issue. The introspection they need to do is when you lose an election in a constituency where you were holding the seat, you need to do some introspection in that area. Okay? When you seem to be losing ground, how is your membership on the grassroots? That's where the elections are won. It's on the grassroots. The people can make as much noise as they want, but how is your grassroots looking like? The district, the council, the constituency structures, how are they? Because you see, the problem what we do is we look at things on from the top part, and we ignore the grassroots or the foundations. That is where the structures are. The introspection they need to do is exactly what I have said. My concern is that they need to really reflect on why are they losing elections in constituencies where they were holding those seats. And then secondly, there's the aspect of how is the party, how is the strength of the party, what is its financial position? Are they able to carry out certain programs and campaign structures, try to revitalize their support group, recast the vision, and communicate where they are going and what they are going to do, because it's a new transition. It's a new era now. Things have changed. So that's what I would say. As to whether they need to change the structure at the top, that's up to them to decide and to see whether, if they change the top leadership, whether it will have any effect on their effectiveness as a party.
I agree. I agree 100%. Do not look at the head of the party, the leader of the party. What you should look at is the platform of the party, the principles of the party. That's what's important, not the leader. The leader is supposed to follow the platform, and the platform is the constituency. If the leader does not follow that, then that's okay too, because what everyone is looking at is they're looking at the policies. They're looking at the platform. Whoever upholds the platform in the districts, in the provinces, will get the vote. Those who stray from it will not get the vote.
And that's one major thing in which the President Sata's party or any other party cannot go against. They can't go against the constituency. They can't go against the individual that has the individual vote. The individual and the individual vote will vote on the platform, what he or she believe is good for the district and the province. Not, they're not voting on the individual. And if they are voting on the individual must adhere to the principles of the platform. So it doesn't mean or it doesn't matter who the head is. It matters whether or not the platform and the principles in which you believe in is being upheld.
Exactly. Dr. Patrick, I like the words that you're using. Roger, I like the words Dr. Patrick is using, the principle and the platform of the party. The question is, the NMD needs to revisit their vision and the way they are conducting or carrying themselves. Probably they need to recast the vision. Recast, you see, recast where they are now or where they've been and what is currently prevailing in the nation. Is it going to sell to the is it going to sell to the electorate? Is it going to sell to their membership? And how are things looking in terms of membership? Yeah. Are they losing members or it's the status quo? Are they gaining members or what is happening? That's how they need to look at things. It's not always
that's right. Are they addressing
yeah.
are they addressing the youth? Are they addressing the women?
Mm-hmm.
Our history, Dr. Patrick, is Zambia. It's not a very long history. It's just that when one party moves out of party out of power for some reason, if they didn't do so well, the chances that they'll go extinct are very, very high. It's like we forget you. You are done. In my view, like Nathan has been explaining, there's probably, I don't know if there is anything the MMD can do, regardless of who comes into power. I think the Zambians, unlike the Americans who are Democrats this year, Democrats, they are Republicans the other day. Zambians, you are one party, if you mess up, so to say, you are done. It's over. You are gone. The PF, with what they are doing, once they are out of power, they can save themselves, but once they are out of power, they may go as well. Area code 412, last four numbers, 5167. Good morning.
Morning. How are you? Simbaya here.
But Simbaya, where have you been?
Yeah, I've been doing things here and there and working a bit
okay,
extra
great,
hard.
Great,
but, yes, but anyway, I personally have spoken to Dr. Nevis Mumba face to face, okay? And I'm telling you these things that I know. The MMD, and I've done business for them when I was in Zambia, the MMD does not have enough money. One. What the PF has done, Dr. Patrick, I was just there about a year ago. What they do, they say, okay, Dr. Patrick, you come out of MMD, and we will make you a minister. And knowing yourself that when you become a minister, you have the Land Cruiser, you have money to buy a new house, you have this, and most of the people, and like Dr. Neva says, Zambians are gullible, and it's very right. They change, you know. Oh, you know, I'm no longer PF. Nevis has money, so I'm going to join Nevis. You see, the politics of Zambia are poverty politics. They are not like the U.S. where somebody has money already. So you must not forget that the reason why MMD is not doing fine, one, the foundations of MMD wasn't very deep. And if you're building a house, I'd ask you, Dr. Patrick, if you're building a house, the taller it goes, what does the foundation has to be? Has to be deeper, isn't it? So the MMD foundation, we never took over, wasn't as deep because you're saying they didn't have computers. Even their own building, they never had their own buildings. So when they collapsed from that's getting out of government, they never had no structure at all. So Nevis came in, very bright person, but he doesn't have a lot of chances. He doesn't have a lot of power in terms of money to maneuver around. And even people that were doing fine, like Dr. Kalombo, they have money, they're lecturers, they all came out from MMD. but they are quiet. You know, I don't know why. All those big people that MMD, they're not helping neighbors. Because one, they they're afraid of him. Two, they just don't feel like they need to do that. They all have scattered. I think the MMD, it's not about the vision as per se. And it's not about leadership, like Dr. Patrick said. It's a lot of factors put together. And it's not even Nevers. MMD Nevers found it. And it is what it is. That the structure itself, and they were saying, sometimes they're saying Nevers lives a luxurious life. Nevers has been a preacher all throughout. He raises his own money. We all know that. Everyone else knows that. But I think that that's where the problem has been, is that the structure of MMD needs to be something to do with not leadership, as Dr. Patrick has said.
Let me join with that and use a competitive explanation. Here in the United States, there are four politicians that are traveling to Las Vegas. And they are traveling to Las Vegas to meet with an individual a multi-billionaire by the name of Elderman. And they are going there for what? They're going there for the money. It's very important to have a certain type of cash flow in the environment in order to sustain what you're doing. In the case of Nevis Mumba, this is exactly what my brother is sharing with everyone. And this is exactly what happens in many political sectors globally. It's the money, following the money. What happens with the money? If the MMD individuals that support Mr. Nevis Mumba, if they come out and overtly support him, they won't have that money. That money will be siphoned off or taken away. And those who accepted the ministry, they want to maintain their money, so therefore they won't say anything. So it's always an economic situation. And so when you're talking about the politics, always look at the economics as well. Remember, press the digitation of politics.
I like both contributions, Vasimba. Thank you, and Dr. Patrick. I think from what we started, you know what I said, every party which moves from power and move away, I think their dependency on government cash, government tools, is so much that when they move out of power without those tools, then they are nothing. And probably this is why UPND seem to be strong. They haven't been in power, but they've seen themselves sustained from year to year. It's a very, very good point. Those who listen to yes, Dr. Pa.
Can I just share two points? The first point is any political party, they do not become extinct; they become dormant. They go to sleep. You think they're no longer around, but they're there, and they're developing ways to reemerge. And the second thing is you can have billions, and this is true for the United States and anywhere and everywhere, in Zambia, anywhere. You can have $1 billion, but that $1 billion cannot buy that one vote.
Amen.
Everybody Amen. Has all the power in their hands. And somebody can spend as much money as they, but they can't buy your vote. And that's what you have. You go to the polls and you vote.
Yeah. So you can give all the negative information you want. We still saw Mitt Romney and lose miserably.
That's right.
Dr. Patrick, I laughed when you said they just go dormant, but I'm not sure if you need Nathan dormant.
Your neighbor's been dormant for a long time, eh? That's Imbaya.
Yes.
And your neighbor's been dormant for a long time.
Yes. But you know what, Dr. Patrick is saying, visions don't really die; they're just dormant. for one or two reasons. They don't die completely. There are people who believe in UNIP until they die with it. They'll just be, I don't care how much you say, what you, they still believe in Kaunda. They still, they never die. They just believe in him.
That's
as,
right.
As much as, yeah.
It's
called being principled. That's Imbaya. It's called being principled, Dr. Patrick. And this is the problem, Roger, I have with our politics and the citizens of our country. We are, and you see, I don't even want to go there, but I have no choice. This is what I said at the, I used to say that time, and I was reminding Dr. Munsanje this last night. I told Dr. Munsanje, it's not that I don't like the President Sata. No. That's not the issue. I have an issue with a person who was UNIP, MMD, and they became also something else. You are not principled. I have a great respect for people who are still UNIP today. I respect most people. People who are still UNIP today. You need to, because they are showing resolve and being principled. You see, you know, some people, even, let me take it in terms of sports or whatever. Some people today, they are supporting, I don't know what teams are there. I'm not into this soccer frenzy going on. You cannot be Manchester United today. Tomorrow you are Chelsea. The other day you are Liverpool. What are you trying to do? You cannot be giants for those of us in America, Dr. Patrick. You can't be giants today, tomorrow you're Philadelphia, the other day you're Cowboys. Choose what you want, where you stand.
It's
the same in politics. You need to show resolve and principle. So I have no hate for President Sata. It's just that I cannot stand a person who was UNIP, MMD, and the UPND, PF, whatever they became. Show principle. It reflects a lot in your life as well. You can't just tell me that you are like that politically. That means that's how you are even in other issues of your life.
Okay. I agree with that. My boss was a San Francisco fan. Now he supports Philadelphia Eagles. I told him...
You can't do that.
I agree with that. Okay,
let me just say this, Roger. It doesn't matter how Zambia, the standards of soccer, how soccer standards are in Zambia today, that's in by, I'll always be Mufurira Wanderers, whether in the 10th division. You need...
But you know what? Here's what surprised me. When you go to Zambia, Zambians are commenting on British soccer. I laughed. I switched off the TV. You are not in Britain. You have not been thrown out of the country. But because of what you get from the internet and you're commenting on this guy in Britain who plays this, they don't care what you... I told them, they don't care what you say.
Basimbaya, stop right there. I'm really with you. It is one thing even on... It surprises me. I agree with you. But we'll go to our main story. To those who listen to us online, on radio, and follow stuff, the good news which is happening in Zambia today, if you are online, you Google newspapers, Zambia Watchdog, it was blocked by government. The Balose news line was blocked by the government. The People's something website was blocked by government. But all these things are now back to normal. You can go online, Zambia Watchdog, www.zambiawatchdog, and read this. I don't know, Dr. Patrick, how we should do. We should take this. Is it that maybe it is a saying as if you can't beat them, maybe just join them, because people were even going to Facebook. They will post whatever they wanted. The Watchdog. They will post whatever. What should we read from this? The Zambians, they've just given up on blocking these sites.
I think it's too early to comment. I think we should stay on, as they say, on this page to return to it. Initially, it's positive, but let's stay on this page. Maybe it's a little too early to comment.
To comment on it. And Hassan, lastly, you have a comment on it? Or we wait, as Dr. Patrick has said.
On what?
On the issue of unblocking, the Zambia Watchdog has been unblocked. All the papers, they were blocking online papers. The Balose newsline was blocked, but now it's like they've unblocked them. One of the comments of Dr. Patrick, which were on Zambia Lusaka Times, was that they can't just keep up with them because people are going other avenues. They are going to Facebook, and Facebook are not
they've
blocked.
Unblocked
in Zambia.
They've unblocked Zambia Watchdog. Okay, it's simple.
Was blocked.
It's just a realization that I'm committing political suicide. It's very simple. 2016 is not very far.
Okay.
Well, but not with a typical Zambian mind. That's not simple.
That's simple.
It's not simple.
The Zambia of 2014 is not the Zambia of 1974.
I understand, but you know what you do? Hey, block Dr. Patrick. I don't like what he says. Okay? If you don't do it, you lose your job. The same money thing we talked about. They follow money.
Yes.
So people, you know what is surprising? I'm surprised people that were in the UK or in the US, they go back to Zambia. They change. You know why? Far away the money is. They change.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I don't understand. Yep. That guy went to this very good school, very good university. I thought you could bring something. He changes.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you. But it's a way, our last story today, in the last 12 minutes or so, Patrick, President Sata has raised a lot of eyebrows again. At one point, he called his own MPs as useless, whether joking or not joking. Now he has called his own cabinet ministers a bunch of useless. Probably that's why he's always shuffling around. But Sebwe, how do you take this story? The president calling his members of the cabinet as useless. What should we read from this?
Thank you, Baroja. Let me just say first, thank you to Dr. Patrick. I love his comments, and it's always a joy to listen to him, and he's an asset to Zambia Block Talk Radio.
Yes, he is.
Yes, and one of these days, Dr. Patrick, if you don't mind, I would like to visit you and just spend some day with you, if you don't mind. To talk to you.
certainly.
When I read that, Roger, and I just said, I didn't even finish reading it, and I said, but he's just shooting himself in the foot. I mean, if we say these ministers can't perform, that means he's not doing his job either, you know? So I don't know what else to say about that, you know? If I was him, I would have never made that comment.
Roger, okay. Following up on that, maybe perhaps we can have a roundtable conference meeting. Maybe we can meet in Dallas or meet in D.C. just to brainstorm. So to piggyback on that suggestion with meeting me, we can all get together in Dallas or D.C.
No,
Roger,
I like that.
It's about time Zambia Block Talk Radio did that. My only thing is, I don't know whether Dan Batisewe really wants to go and visit Dr. Patrick. Did you see what happened to the Carolina Panthers, Daniel? I don't know whether you...
What happened? Tell me.
Moving on to another subject.
Moving right along.
Okay.
All right. This number is... Zebron, I think 913-2282. We are commenting. If it is Zebron, we are commenting on the president calling his own ministers as you. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Roger. I've been following them a little bit late, but you know, me on my take on that one is, it comes down to how much power the president has in our country, and how much. That's when you have to go back now to the constitutional change, like you know, how you know what I'm saying. Because
The president is more like the king in Zambia. You know what I'm saying? Like he can insult his ministers, he can insult his MPs. They'll just be quiet because, oh, he's the president, because he can dissolve the parliament, he can tell you you are fired, whatever. If the constitution changed, I mean, I like the system in America where a minister should be, if someone appoints a minister, they have to be approved by parliament. So that it can be a little bit harder for SATA to just fire someone, bring the someone in. He can fire the president, bring someone in. You know what I'm saying? Like he has so much power that he can control everything. You know, he needs, like, you know how it is here, like, you know, if the president decides to appoint the chief justice, it has to be approved by the Congress. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So he has to think about, like, okay, if I fire this one, if I mistreat this one, and if he goes, by the time I bring in one, the parliament has to approve that. If the parliament does not, the parliament has to vet that guy if he's really fit to be president, what he has done. The parliament should be saying, oh, this guy hasn't done much, so he has to go back, pick another one. You know what I'm saying? So I like the system here is that if you pick someone, it's not only you that look at it that want him. Even the parliament, the Congress has to look at, okay, this guy in 1961, he did this and that and that and that. We're not going to vote for him. Stuff like that. But, you know, it's high time we kind of, like, change the constitution and include those in our constitution so that we update on how we pick leaders. Because the president has so much power. Like, he controls pretty much everything. All the branches of the government are pretty much controlled by the president. You know what I'm saying? So he has so much power that he can insult his ministers. Oh, you are useless. The other day he insulted one of his ministers, like Imwe Mulivashiru, right in front of... The people. You know, and the minister was just like quiet. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and you know, it's sad because, on the other hand, getting back to why you said, Roger, that you don't like SATA, I don't like SATA of one thing. I think he's become a hypocrite. People elected SATA because he says he's going to bring change. When he was health minister, he brought a lot of changes in the health ministry. You know what I'm saying? He was minister of that portfolio when he was Kabata MP. He brought some changes. And he said in 90 days he's going to change a lot of stuff. But pretty much when he took over the government, he pretty much brought all the MMD stuff where ZNBC has to be controlled by the government, this one, everything that he found, he just like added even more. He didn't bring any change, you know what I'm saying? And to me, that's kind of like hypocritical because people put it SATA merely because they thought he was a man of action. He's going to like use his power to change a lot of stuff. But he embraced everything he found because he was a president and it suits very well with him, you know what I'm saying? And that's, to me, it's kind of like become a hypocritical because I look at SATA as an opposition leader, as someone who was a go-getter. You know, he's going to do this. If you don't do it, he fired some nurses at ETH when he found them doing whatever. You know what I'm saying? So he was a fighter when he was in opposition. But now with the president, he has changed and embraced everything he found. To me, that's kind of like hypocritical. You know what I'm saying? So
I like to always use contemporary politics to compare with existing politics. We're talking about President SATA and the way he treats his ministers. Well, let's look at Governor of New Jersey. Let's look at him and look at how he's treating his administration on the backdrop of what happened concerning the George Washington Bridge. So it is there. It is present. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a minister. It could also be a high-ranking administrator in the governor's office of New Jersey.
Yeah, but, you know, doctor, if I cut you short, if you look at Christie, he's on a defense, you know. If you ask Governor Chris Christie, tell him, like, hey, did you mistreat one of your whatever, Christie will say, no, I did not treat him. I did not know what was going on. Those guys, whatever. But if you look at SATA, you'll be very, very happy to admit it. Yeah, fida fi poba fidia. That's why I told them. You know, like, he'll be very happy to admit it. Like, yeah, those are stupid. You know what I'm saying? He'll be very happy. For Christie, if he mistreats his own officials, at least he's going to be on the defense. He's like, no, I didn't know what was going on. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's kind of like ding. You're trying to say, oh, I can't do that. Christie will tell you, no. He will mistreat you, but he'll tell you, I can't do that, you know, those guys, whatever, and stuff like that. But for SATA, he'll be more than happy to accept it. Like, yeah, people will figure, that's why I told them to do that and that. Because the president and those guys will just, like, be there listening to him. You know what I'm saying? So to me, that's kind of like a, because he's showing them that, hey, I am big here, I'm the boss. You know what I'm saying? So you do or you're going to be stupid and you're going to be fired.
Zebron, one of the comments, I think I liked one of the guys on Saka Times, he called himself the MMD chief bootlicker. And he says, I doubt he meant what he said. And he's just frustrated by the type of the type of timber he has to work with to repair the, and sustain the wooden boat that seemed to be sinking fast and taking the country with it. And his ministers seem not to be able to help him. Being a president of the land is higher calling. Gone are the days when you could use fear and intimidation to get things done. We are in a new and uncharted territory, and you need to the best and independent mind to navigate the current world setup and not to just yes men around you. This is, I think, one element which we seem to find our country in. Zeb has talked about it. Basimba talked about it. Dr. Patrick, the politics of poverty in our country, I think, are killing us. These ministers can be called whatever the president wants to call them. They cannot do anything, because if they are fired, that was the only source of income, the only source of whatever they used to do. And we find people behaving this way. But for sure, this boat, Nathan, doesn't seem to be, I don't know if it's a Titanic or a boat, it doesn't need to be going, because a President Sata is in the driving seat of this cabinet. He is a driver who is driving this bus. And if this bus is heading to the ditch, is heading to some destruction, he is in the forefront. He should not even be wasting his own time, Nathan, calling the passengers who are his ministers useless. He should not even be wasting time on that.
You know, talking about politics, let me just interject this. And we're talking about poverty. Perhaps it's a time to use some Tammany Hall politics. Tammany Hall was a politician, or it was a group of politicians in New York City. And what they did was everyone that came off the boat, they did not have any money. They did not have what they call a pot to pee in, but they had that boat. And what they would do is they would bring everybody together, and they would feed them, they would house them, and then they would say, vote for me. So anywhere that there is a great deal of poverty, they also know that they have that vote. And if we can mobilize the impoverished or the people without money to be politically conscious in order to vote, then we might have some changes. Because if the politicians that be know that the people that are in poverty or impoverished will not vote, they will never do anything for them. But if they feel that the group of people that are impoverished now realizes the power of their vote, they'll have a change.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Patrick. Thank you, everyone. This is Open Forum. Join us every Saturday. We bring to you a lot of things we discuss. Next is Nathan, who is bringing in perspective. Another interesting discussion. Please, as we drop, join us, and then we'll continue with that discussion. Thank you so much, and have a great weekend. Yo, yo, yo.